This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Good afternoon, good evening. Welcome once again to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. Each and every Saturday at this time, we sit down and we talk about the disease of addiction. It's all sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, about which more just ahead. So we really have a good show for you today, because if this disease has visited you or someone you know, or if you are curious and wonder what's going on out there, you probably at some point or another have been made aware of something called medication-assisted treatment, MAT for short. It is very much in the news. The federal government's taken a very substantial lead on talking about medication and treating substance abuse. So we're going to take a sort of global view at what this certainly not new protocol is all about. And it's go a long way, I think, towards informing people so that they know what they're dealing with should they have to deal with drug or alcohol abuse. Our guest in the studio, no stranger to the program, a contributor of many times, is Dr. Joseph Troncalli. Dr. Joe is a veteran in the field of substance abuse treatment, 35 years now. He is the medical director of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers and our guest on the program. Hello, Dr. Troncalli. How are you?
Hello, Steve.
Good to see you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Was I right there? This thing is sort of new in the mainstream consciousness, but not a new idea.
Not a new idea. Just to give you a history, the opium wars were fought in the mid-1800s because there were concerns economically for England and Holland to try to make sure that opium was transported into China and those sorts of things. That's how Hong Kong came about. But in any case, opium was not sort of a new thing back in the 17 and 1800s. What happened in the 1800s was that they figured out how to mix opium with alcohol and make laudanum, which became kind of the drug of choice for almost everything. And of course, we have the Civil War and all these injured war veterans and that sort of thing. So a lot of people got addicted to opiates back in the 1800s and before, of course. But what happened was that opium wasn't really regulated in the United States. And back in the early 1900s, there were actually opium clinics where people could go to get opium once they were addicted to opium, so they didn't have to obtain it from the black market, that sort of thing. And there really wasn't much of a black market because it was fairly legal and you could go to a pharmacy or a drugstore and get opium, cocaine, those sorts of things. Well, anyway, that obviously was not exactly the way they wanted things to run. And so in 1914...
At that point, they were administering it in a... in an effort to maintain somebody's problems with opiates.
Yes. In other words, there were people who got addicted to opiates. They were not able to sort of live comfortably without their opiates. And so there were places where you could go almost like a spa and
really
get opiates every day. It was almost like a methadone clinic of today.
Mm-hmm.
And so these things popped up in the South and in the, as far as I know, the East Coast. And anyway, in 1914, Congress, in conjunction with a lot of other world governments, decided to pass laws to regulate opium and opiates. It was really opium in those days because there wasn't a lot of synthetic opiates. So they passed the Harrison Act of 1914, which actually created the Drug Enforcement Administration, and that was when they made it so that doctors had to basically be the gatekeepers for opiates. And so you only could get opiates if you went to a doctor, and you could not be detoxed from opiates with opium. They made it illegal to do
that.
So what that did was that basically drove opiates underground. So you instantly created a black market. It was like prohibition of opiates versus prohibition of alcohol.
I'm struck by the irony that the Department of the DEA was created to get a handle on the use of opiates. And here we are, you know, almost 100 years later. And in spite of that effort 100 years ago, opiates are the problem right now, the biggest problem.
Yes, well, it didn't work out very well.
Didn't work out, did it?
No. Yeah, well, I mean, they repealed prohibition, but they didn't repeal opiate prohibition, so to speak. So then what was set up over the years was is that for people who had pain or who were addicted to opiates, they basically had to see a physician, and that set up the cat and mouse game between opiates and physicians and patients that still goes on today. And then over the years, pharmacy companies started developing – well, actually in the Second World War, it was the German chemists who – see, Germany during the Second World War couldn't get their hands on raw opium because of blockades and that sort of thing. And so Hitler put the good German chemists to work to figure out how to make things like Darvon compounds and stuff like that. So that's when synthetic opiates came about. So then you were manufacturing opiates in addition to having natural opiates, and that started all of that. So fast forward to the Vietnam War, and we have a lot of soldiers over in Vietnam who are getting addicted to opiates that's Far Eastern opium, and they come back to the United States, and we have the beginning of what we now know as the heroin epidemic. And the government then said, well, we can't have this happening. So there was a push to begin medication-assisted treatment again, and that's where methadone clinics began basically kind of in the 60s and 70s.
And I think they are the – or that is the term, methadone, that most people who even think about this are aware of. And methadone is nothing more than a medication-assisted way of treating opiate addiction, right?
Yes, it's an opiate. It's a longer-acting opiate. And the idea behind that, again, comes into the concept of what's called harm reduction. So in other words, it's much better for somebody to take a controlled substance in a controlled way rather than getting heroin off the street where you don't know what you're getting.
But the purpose, if I understand it, of what you've just described with regard to methadone, I don't want to use the word Band-Aid because it's more serious than that. But right. It really was not about anything other than, as you say, harm reduction or, look, these people need this stuff. We can't let them have it. Maybe this will help them. It doesn't address anything other than that, does it?
Well, again, the idea behind that is that once somebody becomes addicted to opiates, the track record for an opiate addict is generally very poor. I was listening to a commercial on the radio actually coming over here, and they talked about how if you have a significant opiate addiction, you're looking at either prison, death, or recovery. Now, I don't think it's quite as dire as that necessarily. It doesn't have to be. But in fact, what happens to people once they're addicted to opiates, and especially to heroin, their morbidity and mortality is like 64 times greater than the general population. Mm-hmm. It's not 10 times greater. It's not 20 times greater. It's 64 times. So people who get addicted to street opiates basically are looking at a very dire prognosis.
And something like methadone is a way to keep them from dying.
That's correct.
In effect, right?
That's correct. And it's more complicated than that. Without going into a lot of brain chemistry and that sort of thing, people who have opiate addiction have tremendous cravings for the drug. And the only thing for some people that will help them with the cravings is to basically continue them on some dosage of opiate.
Our guest in the studio is Dr. Joseph Troncalli. Dr. Troncalli is the medical director of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. He joins us today to talk about the growing awareness of the effectiveness of medication-assisted treatment, or MAT, as they describe it. So it's nothing new, as we said at the beginning. They've been treating this problem with opiates for a very long time with drugs or medicine. So where are we today?
So in around 2000, I think it was 2000 or 2001, President Clinton signed a bill allowing physicians to use a newer form of opiate called buprenorphine, which is known by its trade name as Suboxone. And Suboxone basically is a mixture of an opiate agonist and antagonist and naloxone, which is to try to reduce its street value to make it long.
Can I just describe the difference between the two terms?
Yes.
The antagonist and the...
Right. It gets a little bit tricky pharmacologically, but methadone is a pure opiate, and so it basically has no antagonist properties. Buprenorphine is a drug that, after you take a certain amount of it, basically starts to kind of work against itself, if that makes any sense. So it's normally dosed at about 16 milligrams, but after you get past about 32 milligrams, it starts to actually antagonize itself. So it's more difficult to get high. Now, it's still abused, so I'm not trying to paint it rosily or anything like that. I just want people to understand that of the choices that we have to do medication-assisted treatment, buprenorphine, which is, again, the generic name for it, is probably one of the better drugs that we can use. Methadone is still used, and it's still effective for what it's used for. Suboxone or buprenorphine is thought to be a bit safer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are other drugs that the government has approved now to be used in this way, and we'll find out what they are and what they do when we continue on Recovery Radio. Stay with us. We have a whole lot more. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're talking with Dr. Joseph Troncalli. He is medical director of Retreat Premier Addiction Centers. Dr. Troncalli has joined us to discuss the growing awareness and use of something called medication-assisted treatment, an old idea of using medicine in the treatment of substance abuse. In the first segment there, we were talking about the history of it and where we are today and a couple of the drugs, methadone being the most famous that have been used in this manner. What are other drugs that are also used in this manner?
Well, one of the other medicines that we use for medication-assisted treatment is a drug that's called naltrexone, which there's trade names for it. One is Vivitrol, which is an injectable that you take once a month. There's Revia, which is a pill that you take once a day. But this medicine, naltrexone, basically is an opiate blocker. And it sits on opiate receptors so that the effects of opiates can't actually be felt by the person.
So you take the drug, and then even if you try to get high, you will not get high.
Right. Now, you can overcome that. Again, I don't like to put that out for everybody because I don't want to give people false impressions about any of this. In other words, it works to an extent. But the idea behind it is that it sort of disincentivizes someone from using opiates because
they're not going to get high.
Opiates. Right.
Yeah. But if incentives worked, I mean, there are plenty of incentives not to use opiates. I mean, as your life gets destroyed and your health is ruined, that doesn't stop people. How does this drug work in that regard?
Well, again, if you look at the studies, people who take naltrexone who are addicted to opiates tend to do better than people who are not taking it. So in other words, if you give somebody a placebo and you give somebody naltrexone, people who are taking naltrexone tend to do better, not only for opiates, but it also, for whatever reason, works for alcohol. And so, again, it's not a panacea drug. It's not going to prevent somebody who says, well, I'm going to get high anyway from getting high and using opiates and overcoming the effects of the naltrexone.
Yeah. Can I ask you how additionally dangerous is it to use to both use illegal opiates while you're taking these drugs?
They've done a lot of studies around that, and it's really not significantly more dangerous. In other words, like, people are not going to overdose more because they're taking naltrexone. Now, we always, tell people that the bigger problem for people who have been off of opiates and then go back and relapse is that their tolerance goes down. And so if somebody's been away from opiates for a period of time and then they go back to using the same amount of opiates, their risk of overdose goes up substantially because they become opiate naive rather than tolerant,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
My understanding is that you don't have to be away from it that long for that dose to have a lethal effect.
You really don't.
Right?
And again, unfortunately, as we all know who have had anything to do with this epidemic, there's more people dying from opiate overdoses than there are people dying from car accidents in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, I know.
Yeah.
And nationally, we're getting close to that. Yes. Over 30,000, I think, nationally.
Yes.
So we're getting close.
It's very sad.
Getting close to the highway fatalities.
Right.
Which has always been described as a slaughter.
Yeah, and it is, and it's still a slaughter, and it's usually affecting mostly our young people. So the thing that we need to understand is that the medication-assisted treatment is substantially meant to help people not kill themselves with opiates.
And these – and we're going to – in the next segment, I want to get much deeper into the component that we have not yet talked about that is absolutely critical and must go hand in hand with medication-assisted treatment, and that is counsel. It's just foolish to do the one without the other. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I wish we had 12 hours to talk about that, but I'll try to cover as much of that as I can
before
when we
get,
come back.
Okay. Before we get to that, though, we've covered a couple of drugs. Are there other drugs that are in common use now?
Really, the big ones are methadone and buprenorphine. So those are the ones that you're going to hear about. They both have pretty consistent track records for people that use them properly. And again, one of the things that we should talk about is the fact that both are abusable. And it's very important for providers who are providing these medications to follow up with patients and not just give them the medicine and say
– and walk away from
yeah,
it.
Right.
Think it's okay. Is that one of the reasons that medication-assisted treatment has sort of come in fits and starts – because people are just worried about that? We're going to use drugs on people who have no history of dealing with drugs safely. Is that one of the reasons it's held it back?
Yes. I think that, again, there are problems on a number of different levels. There's problems with the patients. There's problems with the providers. There's problems with the public understanding how this is supposed to work. And there's problems, honestly, with how it's enforced because in my experience doing this, I see a lot of people who get prescribed these drugs in a way that I think is kind of improper because of the fact that they're not being followed up properly.
You mean the sort of mills, Suboxone mills?
Yeah,
places
well,
like
and
that?
Some of them are mills and some of them are well-meaning practitioners who I think probably need some additional help in learning what really works and what doesn't work in terms of their patients.
And they have a willing sort of client base among people who think this is a fast shortcut to the hell of opiate addiction, right?
Yes. Again, patient education is really, really important because if people think, well, this is just going to be my substitute heroin or whatever, they're really not catching on to what we're really trying to do to help. It's not being used in the most proper way.
Well, on this point, and then we'll take our break here. MAT is not a cure for the disease of addiction, correct?
No, it's not. It's not meant to be a cure. It's meant to be a treatment. Just like insulin doesn't cure diabetes, medication-assisted treatment doesn't cure opiate addiction.
And that's what we're talking about on Recovery Radio today. Medication-assisted treatment, MAT, for short. We have much more with Dr. Joseph Troncalli. Please don't go away.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We're going to continue with our conversation with Dr. Joseph Troncalli straight ahead. But I want to remind you that all of this is made possible by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. And I tell you every single week, when I give you the phone number for Retreat, it is purely and totally informational. Anything you hear on this program that you want more information on, if you're dealing with the issue of this disease already and have questions about the treatment you're getting, we offer you this phone number purely as informational. Now, does that mean that Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers aren't fully capable of handling any problem you might have themselves? Yes, they are justifiably proud of what they do and are recognized everywhere as being a terrific treatment centers. But here's the phone number call it. They're not selling anything. One of the things that goes on here is you want to help with this, you got to go get it. This is a phone number that might save somebody's life if you have it. 855-859-8808. That's the phone number for Retreat Premier Addiction Centers. 855-859-8808. Their medical director is our guest in the studio today, bringing us up to speed on one of the many things that surrounds the disease of addiction that people are confused and just wrong about, and that is the medication-assisted treatment. There, one of the things that has always made, as I know you know, Doctor, this disease difficult to fight is that the public has just massive misinformation about what we're talking about. So someone listening now who has tried other things and just with no success, and we know that the relapse rate for opiates is horrifying, and are hearing stuff about, well, wait, they've got medicine, they've got shots, they've got pills. What do they need to know when they're trying to get a handle on this?
That's a great question, and it's difficult to give you a hard and fast rule about this, but let's say that you find yourself addicted to opiates, whether you're doing street heroin or whether you got put on pain medications and you had back pain and now you find yourself taking more and more opiates and you feel that you can't get off of them or you're having withdrawal and that sort of thing. The first thing that needs to happen is an awareness that you have a problem. That's number one. Number two is that it's important for you to try to get help from either your primary care doctor or an addiction treatment center or some doctor that understands addiction or a psychiatrist. But you need to get into the system in some way so that people can begin to help you. Now, the first thing that has to happen is you're likely to need detoxification from the opiates. And so to safely detox people requires that you either have outpatient or inpatient detoxification, which means that we would give someone an opiate or an opiate antagonist like buprenorphine to get you off the opiates to start with so you're detoxed. Now, once you're detoxed, the problem becomes what are you going to do going forward? And there are a number of things that are possible. The way that we like to go about doing this is trying to get people into some sort of a rehabilitation program, whether it's an outpatient program, an inpatient program, or whatever. Now, if you're addicted to opiates and you have been addicted to opiates, and let's say, let me just give a typical example. Someone who has been in treatment and has relapsed on multiple occasions, maybe overdosed, you're at high risk for death because of the problem with overdose. Now, that person, we would consider a good candidate for medication-assisted treatment because we want to save your life, number one. The thing that needs to happen at that point is that, in my belief system, you need to be with someone who knows what they're doing in terms of being able to provide the treatment and be able to give some sort of follow-up care and do the medication-assisted treatment correctly. It's not enough just to take methadone or to take buprenorphine.
By themselves as a magic bullet. It doesn't work like
right.
that.
Right. It's not meant to work that way. What's meant to happen is that you use the methadone or the buprenorphine as a way of cutting down on your cravings, being able to feel that you are able to live a normal life off of street opiates or prescription opiates. And for people who have pain, for instance, and that sort of thing, medication-assisted treatment can also help with that so that you're not, again, having to go back and use more opiates.
It's going to sound terribly non-medical because I'm not a doctor, but
sure.
It sounds like you're describing a situation where you want to stabilize the patient, no matter what the problem is, and then begin, once that happens, which is absolutely critical, then begin to work on what the problems are.
Is that it? And see, again, if you can't buy somebody some time away from the street or prescription opiates, then you're ultimately going to fail. Now,
You need that area to go to work, where the work has to begin.
Yes.
And that's what we think of as traditional treatment for this disease.
Right. And it's very important for people to understand that perhaps people will not have to be on this for the rest of their lives, but you definitely want to buy people time enough so that they can get their lives back in order. Now, to do that, first of all, the thing that I wanted to say is that people who are on either methadone or buprenorphine need to be regularly tested, drug tested, so that you're not cheating, that you're not selling your buprenorphine or your methadone, that you're not doing things that you were doing when you were in your active addiction. That's number one. Number two is you probably need some sort of psychological counseling and that sort of thing, because opiate addiction comes with a lot of other baggage. And 65% of people who are addicted to opiates generally have some other mental health issue like depression or bipolar disorder or things like that. So somebody needs to be watching all of that sort of thing.
Because none of that's going away no matter what kind of medication you're going to be using.
Right. And if I could get into this just briefly, the other thing is that almost everybody that suffers with addiction is ultimately suffering with some sort of shame and guilt and some sort of escape. They're using the opiates as a way to escape feelings. And if people are not able to get in touch with that and get some help so that they can begin to practice some self-compassion and to be able to take care of themselves and to start moving towards their values rather than constantly in this cycle of escape feelings, numb themselves, suffer, and repeat the pattern, then we're not going to ultimately really help them no matter whether they're using medication-assisted treatment or not.
In your experience treating patients, are both the patients and their families aware that this is the path that's in front of them, or do they arrive going, "Gee, I need some of that Vivitrol, I need some of Suboxone, get me straight"? Do they understand what they're looking at?
I don't think so, because again, even the treatment communities are not 100% in line with each other. I think that there are a lot of people who are very traditional about this and feel that people should be abstinent. And I have no problem with abstinence as long as people can maintain abstinence.
Remain abstinent.
But if they don't maintain abstinence, then they definitely need something else to try to help them. That's number one. Number two is that, again, people who have addiction are going to act like people who have addiction. And so families get torn apart because they want the right thing for their family member. The family member may not use their medication-assisted treatment properly. Again, like I said, people sell the drugs once they get their hands on them and that sort of thing, and are still active in their addiction. And so that's why we say people probably need more treatment at some level, where you can just take them off the streets and get them in a safe place so they can kind of get their life together enough so they can do this properly. It's very complicated. I mean, I'm not soft-soaping this at all. Anybody that's gone through this, and it happened in my family, and so I've lived through this. I'm not just a passive observer of this. I know how tough this can be. And sometimes people don't get this ever and die from their addiction. Some people get it, but it takes several treatments, multiple treatments, years. You know, I'm not, again, soft-soaping it. I'm just saying, though, that there are good and better ways of dealing with this, and there's poor ways of dealing with this. And what I mostly see is poor, because there's not a lot of resources out there, unfortunately, to do this right.
Of course, the government very lately has come out a little more directly on the benefits, the potential benefits of MAT, correct?
Yes, and that's a two-edged sword. On one hand, they've allowed doctors who have, for instance, buprenorphine licenses, which you have to have a special license to prescribe it. They've allowed them to expand their patient population. But the downside to that is if someone's not doing it correctly, they're just taking care of more people in an improper way. And so we have to be really careful. I really want people to understand that this has to be done properly.
So you know of situations where people think that they can just shortcut this process by finding a doctor that can prescribe these medicines and taking the medicines and thinking they're done with it.
Yes. And again, they basically continue to use – in other words, they haven't changed their lifestyle. They're only taking an additional medicine.
Yeah, they're still using – and in a sense abusing drugs.
Right. Correct.
Our guest in the studio is Dr. Joseph Troncalli. Dr. Troncalli is the medical director at Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, and we are discussing this I don't call it a phenomenon, but growing awareness that there are multiple ways of treating the disease of addiction, one of which involves medicine, medication-assisted treatment. Matt, you've probably read or heard something about this. We got about a minute or two in this segment here before we break again. Again, who's a candidate for this kind of treatment? Is everyone who is addicted a candidate, or are there better candidates?
Well, I think that the most needy of this type of treatment are people who are chronic relapsers, people who have tried, for instance, to maintain abstinence but not been able to, people who have overdosed multiple times or even one time. I mean, again, that we have a lot of people who have been very close to death, and we want to be able to see those people not put themselves in harm's way and buy themselves time so that they can begin to get a life.
I know we can't generalize, but generally speaking,
yes.
If someone is at the beginning of their efforts to get sober and
yes.
clean, have not relapsed multiple times, and they show up for treatment and think, well, we're going to get some medication assisted, should they not be encouraged to do that?
No, I don't want to paint it that way. I think, in other words, what I'm trying to say is this: there's definite candidates, and then there's people who would probably benefit if they do it right. The whole thing of is, are you doing it correctly? You know, and again, obviously, I have my own thoughts about what correct means, and other people out there would.
Well, my experience now, talking to folks like you for a couple of years now on this program, is that is the central premise of all treatment: is it's got to be done honestly, conscientiously, and correctly, or
yes.
it's not going to work.
Absolutely.
It's just not going to work. Dr. Joseph Troncalli, our guest on Recovery Radio. We have another segment. Don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Boy, I tell you every week, the purpose of the program is to inform and educate, and I think we got a lot of good information today about something that you're probably reading and hearing more about lately with regard to the disease of addiction, and that is medication-assisted treatment. MAT is the shorthand for that. Enlightening us, as he always does, is Dr. Joseph Troncalli, who is medical director at Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Doc, I want to thank you. Well, always a pleasure to see you and talk to you.
It's my pleasure.
Let's kind of thumbnail it here, review what we've talked about. Can we do a couple of pros and cons about medication-assisted treatment? Give me some of the pros. I mean, they're fairly obvious.
Sure. Well, the pros for medication-assisted treatment is it keeps people from killing themselves. That's the number one thing. In other words, we feel that medication-assisted treatment is probably one of the great harm reduction strategies for people with opiate addiction. There are some people that would argue that everybody who is addicted to heroin or prescription opiates should be on medication-assisted treatment based on a lot of good data. In practice, we probably are not putting everybody on medication-assisted treatment because a lot of people want to try to stay abstinent without it. Some people are not able to either afford it or get to the doctors and that sort of thing. So there are barriers to treatment.
So it can be expensive.
It can be expensive. It probably shouldn't be as expensive as it is, but that's what
happens.
Is it
covered happens. By insurance?
It's covered by some insurance, not all insurances. And again, that's another thing. So that's one thing. Another thing is that, as we stated, you have a couple of different options. One is that you can use the buprenorphine or methadone as an opiate medication versus using Vivitrol or naltrexone, which is the opiate antagonist, which helps to decrease cravings and blocks opiate receptors. So those are the pros. In other words, those would be the reasons that we would want to use it.
So what's the downside here? What are the cons?
Well, the downside, and again, I'm sorry I sort of mentioned that, and there's cost that for some people that mm-hmm. becomes prohibitive. For people who are in methadone programs, you have to show up every day unless they allow you to do take-home doses and that sort of thing. Suboxone is a little bit easier because it can be prescribed for, I think, up to a month at a time. So that's
helpful.
Helpful.
Yeah.
But the other downsides are that, again, methadone and suboxone can be abused. And it is abused, and we see a lot of people that get their prescriptions and then sell it on the street. And again, they maintain their habit by getting a medicine that they can sell on the street, which, again, that's not the way it should happen. But diversion becomes a problem for these medication-assisted therapies as much as it does for other types of prescription opiates.
There's not much that can really be done about that.
Well, there's a lot of things they're trying to do. They're trying all kinds of things with labeling, trying to follow prescriptions with barcodes, those sorts of things.
Pennsylvania's really doing a pretty good job about keeping databases about prescription
drugs.
Well,
that just got started. Yeah. And we were actually 49th out of 50th. But anyway, we'll take it. And
right.
So now there is a prescription pharmacy database where doctors get into the database and know whether people mm-hmm. Are using opiates from other sources.
Let me, before I get to the final question here after you, let me ask you this question. We know that of the people who need treatment for substance abuse, a pitifully small number actually get treatment. Could something like medication-assisted treatment increase that number of people?
It could if people are able to gain access and if there are enough practitioners to be able to provide the care. I really, again, if I were king of the world, which I'm not, but what I think should happen is there should be outpatient treatment programs that would be solely geared towards addiction. There are a lot of doctors who do this kind of as part of their practice, but it's not like an addiction practice. And there's places that probably could do it but are not doing it because, again, you have to have a special license and training. And a lot of people honestly don't, they just don't want to take care of people with addiction. It's a difficult problem to take care of, and not everybody's willing to do that.
And finally, in the couple minutes we have left, a reminder, medication-assisted treatment is just that, treatment, not a cure. And must coincide with other treatments.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So we certainly want people to understand that this is something that requires comprehensive. Again, like I said, using the diabetes model, you have to not only take your insulin, but you have to diet, you have to exercise, you have to take other medicines, and addiction's no different.
Dr. Joseph Troncalli, it's always a pleasure. Always shed a whole lot of light on a very complicated issue. We thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
Hope you come back again real soon. The rest of you, enjoy your weekend, and don't forget to look for us. And by the way, if you know anybody who might benefit from listening to this program, you might mention that on Saturdays, Recovery Radio is here talking about the disease of addiction and the many ways that you can battle it. Millions and millions of people, are living in long-term sobriety, free from drugs and alcohol. It can be done.
It can be done.
So enjoy the weekend, and we will see you next time on Recovery Radio.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.